I understand.
Blog Talk Radio.
It's too young to be on that bridge. It's too young to be sitting on the edge. Too young to be lost away. You're too young.
Are you wondering if you're in a healthy relationship, or maybe you'd like to create one? And if it is possible to create greater intimacy, it is possible. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Healthy Baby Boomers Network Blog Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, healing through love, relationship healer, somatic body psychotherapist, and health and wellness coach, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me book series, the romantic novel Love in the Blizzard of Life, and creator of the Healing Through Love lessons. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who keep proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond. Author, relationship coach, shock social science professor, and former teacher of yoga and tai chi, Suzanne Robbins earned her master's degree while raising three teenagers. Her thesis about reuniting mind, body, and spirit in healthcare led to many workshops and seminars, including gender issues and personality dynamics, as some of the topics covered. Her Exploring Intimacy book is powerful. It combines the best of Western psychology and Eastern mysticism. So I'm so happy to welcome you, Suzanne Robbins.
Thank you, Erica.
Yeah, we've known each other a long time, and I know you've been in this field of mind-body-spirit awareness. So let's just share for our listeners a little bit about your background and education that first led you to write a master's thesis about reuniting the mind, body, and spirit in healthcare, and then years later to write your book about exploring intimacy.
So my story starts on a little sad note. My son was in an accident when he was 10 years old. But the happy note is he's about to turn 50, and he's doing great.
Wow.
But at the time when Western medicine, you know, was there to save his life, I was so grateful. But then it seemed afterward that I was just more drawn toward the more esoteric healing arts. And so essential oils, laying on of stones, you know, all different kinds of things that we tried as he continued to recover in a wonderful way. And it's one of those things you don't know. If we hadn't done those things, would he have still recovered so well? But that was what got me interested. And I've only, for my own body and for my children as well, have used kinds of healing arts. And so that was my first introduction into the idea of the difference between Eastern medicine and Western medicine. I had also started meditating even before that accident when my children were small, like only 3 and 4 years old. And so as a meditator, as opposed to using any other kind of drugs or, you know, in the 60s and 70s, I just found such magnificent peace. And found that all the different workshops that I took and all the different things that I did before I went to college added to my relationship with my husband and my children.
Beautiful. So you've really explored the field of intimacy, not just the healing arts.
Right. And the idea of looking into me, the idea of, in the second paragraph, I define the word intimacy as into me you see, which I got from Stan Dale and the Human Awareness Institute back in the in the 70s when I lived in intentional communities. And that I loved that idea of I can see into you, you can see into me, and that's what creates the intimacy, the idea of transparency.
Oh, so tell us a little bit about these intentional communities. What were they?
I lived at Harbin Hot Springs, actually was my very first one, which unfortunately has now been burning in the California fires. And Human Awareness Institute was a huge part of that. And it was, you know, there it was the idea of coming together, sharing resources, sharing our bodies, you know, at that period of history when the whole free love, free sex kind of idea was waning because it was after the AIDS epidemic, and finding healthy ways to be together. So learning about safe sex, learning about what learning about Kundalini, energetic sex, rather than having exchanging body fluids, all that sort of stuff was part of my education, if you will, before I ever went to college.
Mm-hmm. Before college. Okay. What have you learned about the energy field from all of this work? You know, why is that important for us to know about it?
Well, I think it's extremely important because whether we know about it or not, it's there. And it's about personal space. You know, some people don't mind if you get closer. Some people want to keep you more at an arm's distance. And when we know about our energy field and what it is we give off with our body language, with our tone of voice, all of that kind of thing plays into how people relate to us and how they want to either know us better or turn a cold shoulder before any words are ever spoken.
Right. It's funny. There was a woman, I was at some networking event, and I had offered to give a body therapy session for anyone who might want it, a private session, and they don't get undressed or anything. And one lady said to me, oh, I would never do that. It's, you know, I wouldn't want to reveal myself like that. And I took one look at her, and she was revealing herself. She had like a little dowdy outfit. Her body language was all constricted. You know, it was just so obvious what she was all about, and she was afraid of revealing that. So we can't hide
it. Right, exactly. And so our energy field, one of the things, you know, the person who I consider my teacher is Carolyn Mace, M-Y-S-S, mm-hmm. who wrote a book called Anatomy of Spirit. And she, you know, is talking about how we have energy leaks in our body, and that, you know, that our energy field, like you're saying, either puts out this negative vibe, and that you're talking about her clothes and the way she talked, or, you know, or we also just have an aura around us of joy and happiness and enthusiasm, and people pick up on that. And again, it doesn't matter whether we know of it or we label it or we've learned it or studied it, it's just there and part of our everyday interaction with people.
Absolutely. And it wasn't just her clothing, it was her whole body posture.
Right.
It was
very
constricted,
Right. And since you and I, you know, are old friends and talking openly on this blog talk radio, Harbin Hot Springs was a clothing optional community. There, it was all about the springs. You had to wear clothes everywhere else but in the water. But the idea of being in the water with 50 to 150, 200 people, you know, was just a whole big, huge way of revealing our inner light and our inner aura. And it's interesting because when you're in a clothing optional setting, people make much more eye contact. It's not about looking at the body. It's about seeing the person behind the body or within the body, you know, looking through their eyes rather than looking at them and judging about their clothes or their jewelry or, you know, other external things. So Harbin was a huge part of my personal growth path.
I would say at the beginning, people probably are really looking at the bodies, especially if some people are clothed and some are not clothed.
You would be surprised. I don't know, you know, if you've ever been in any kind of naturist or nudist setting, it really
I did do something
really
like that at I did something like that at a Club Med, you know,
right.
and, in Martinique. But the problem
right.
was there were people undressed, topless, and then there were people dressed in the distance that could watch this, and that was not really
right.
good.
Right,
that's,
right.
That's
in that
what
way.
I'm talking about.
And also, if there's alcohol involved or drugs involved, that changes it too. And most
mm-hmm.
any ones that I've participated in, no drugs or alcohol are allowed. So it's very different, you know, if you're in a drinking atmosphere, you know, especially alcohol, to me is even more removes the inhibitions more than marijuana. I've never been a smoker of marijuana. Now that it's legalized and I live in Oregon, you know, I have a different attitude about that. I still don't smoke, but I'm finding it really works for my joints, aches and pains. But back to exploring intimacy.
Well,
you know, it's just, so, it is, so, it, you know, it's my, and so my intentional community, just to close that piece, you know, that, so Harbin was my main intentional community, although I lived in a few, I explored a few others after that as well. But that's a whole, another whole
but
story.
But I have a question about that. So what about, you know, intentional community and clothing optional? What about that taught you something about intimacy or taught you about the lack of intimacy?
Right, right. So one of the things I write about in the book is the idea of personality dynamics. So once you remove the clothes and the jewelry and all of those outward signs, I then started studying Jung's ideas around introverts and extroverts and sensate and feeling and, you know, that Myers-Briggs thing, which was, again, very popular back in the 80s and 90s, and discovered that the more we know about each other's personality, the better we can be in relationships. So that's the idea of intimacy at that level, that if I know someone's an introvert and that they're how they recharge their batteries is by being alone, reading a book, moving away from me, I can make room for that. I'm very much an introvert. So I have to be, I mean, extrovert, I'm the extrovert. So I have to be careful not to be in someone's face, you know, not to expect them to be attending to me all the time if I'm going to hang out with an introvert, which my relationships have been, you know, because opposites attract. And because I'm mm-hmm. attracted to their more quiet, introverted way of being and being able to sit in silence with them, it settles me down. You know, whereas if I'm with another extrovert, we just keep escalating and escalating and escalating until we exhaust each other. And so my long-term relationships have been with more introverted people. And so it was that kind of insight that led to the writing of the book as well. So it's integrating this idea of the inward and the outward. I'm doing with my hand like an infinity sign. You know, it's like there's that midpoint where we have our inner self, but then the one side of the infinity is what we present to the world in our energy field and the way we dress and talk. And then the other side is what's going on in the inside. You know, so what's not revealed and what intimacy is about is revealing that innermost self. What are our hopes and our dreams and our wishes, and how do we want to be touched? How do we want to be received? How do we want to interact? And then the last one on that Myers-Briggs scale is are we judgmental or perceptive, the P and the J, but a better way to describe that is, do we want closure or do we like to keep things open-ended? And knowing that about somebody, is it okay if there's just an ongoingness to the relationship, whether we see each other frequently or not, or other people, just when they're done, they're done. And knowing that and how important that is to both in understanding ourselves and understanding others.
That's huge, because I happen to be
huge.
Dealing with several couples where maybe someone had an affair or something's going on. It's not clear about the relationship and one person needs more time. You know, it's like each person has to negotiate, how do I want to handle this? Do we just end
right.
it? You know, some people are very good at, you know, it doesn't feel right, you end it. But there's other people that
right.
look at the bigger picture and what they do like about it. So that's huge what you're saying.
It is huge.
So
and so
question,
and go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead. Well, just to say, in couples coaching or counseling, you know, it's helping people to see that and to understand, you know, that where they're coming from, you know, that using that little cliche, where are you coming from? Are you coming from a place of introversion or extroversion? I mean, to start there and then going deeper with that.
There's so much. So, you know, people talk about toxic relationships, unhealthy relationships, and get out of them. So what would you say about that? What do you think is unhealthy? And do you think people should get out of it, or what should they do?
Well, I think what's unhealthy is not knowing the other person. Well, first of all, let me say what's unhealthy is not knowing ourselves. You know, what makes an unhealthy relationship is if both people are not willing to look at the simplest thing. Am I an introvert or extrovert? I just pulled out David Snarch's Intimacy and Desire book, where he talks about high desire and low desire. I mean, those are the things that people come to counseling because one person, you know, is wanting to be more sexual, the other one is wanting to be less sexual. And once we know that about each other and can find some middle ground, both whether it's a simple thing like personality or whether it's more the intimacy, the way people usually think about intimacy is what are we doing in the bedroom? So as far as toxicity, it's like where the toxic is not talking about it. What's healthy is talking about it. What's healthy is being able to share your hopes and dreams and feelings with each other on every level.
That's so true. So how do you get people who are not talking? Well, I can almost answer that, but I'm asking you, how do you get them to be doing the talking?
Right. Well, if they've come for counseling or coaching, it's because they're looking for somebody to help them move forward. You know, so once we have a client, that's wonderful. How do we convince people that coaching or counseling is a wonderful thing? Doing things like what you and I are doing right now, you know, putting out on Blog Talk Radio that. It's hard for two people to navigate all of the different parts of intimate relationships with only two people. Once you put a third person in there and you have somebody else to mediate, to talk to help point things out, to listen carefully, it changes everything. The dynamic changes because it's like you have a three-legged stool instead of a two-legged stool.
And you have a witness to the situation who's not part of the situation.
Right, exactly. But, and you're holding each other accountable if you're willing to go in an ongoing, whether it's once a week or once a month, you know, even for short term. I mean, we're not talking about therapy where you're going for the rest of your life. We're talking about maybe for 2 or 3 months or maybe once a month over a 6 month period. Makes a huge difference.
And I've also found many people come into counseling where one or both of them want to prove that the other person's wrong.
Right.
So they're not
that.
Really coming, you know, because they want to look at themselves.
Right. And that's why, like I said, the Exploring Intimacy starts with that this book is about into me see. First, we have to know ourselves before we can give ourselves, offer ourselves, be in relationship with other people. And it's not just about a person who is our sexual partner. One of the things that I say is that everybody has to go from the bedroom, wherever they sleep, through the kitchen to their workplace. When they leave work, they go back through their kitchen, back to their bedroom again. And so it's the people we meet in the kitchen as well as the people we meet at work that we're also being intimate with in a way not as what goes on in the bedroom, but where our personalities are being involved, where our energy field is being involved, everything is involved.
And that's something that none of us can ever really know, how much influence is happening to another person, how they're feeling around other people. They share whatever they share, but you don't know everything.
Right. Exactly. And so some people, when they come in from the workplace into an intentional community or whether it's into a one-on-one relationship, if people are living together or even just meeting for dinner, and that's where the talking comes. Well, how was your day today? You know, what happened? And they might say, I don't want to talk about it. Or they might say, I lost all my computer files and I'm really frazzled right now. You know, once you even have that little sentence, you know better where to meet them. you know, I had a wonderful calm day, or I'm bored to death. You know, whatever two or three words that they might say about how their day was helps you know where the conversation is going to go from that. And the people might be at different levels. The introvert might be very excited because they've had a wonderful day, and the extrovert may be very down because they've had a horrible day. And then there's a little bit of role reversal happening. And you know, then that's, the more you know each other, the more you're able to, you know, work along with that as well over dinner or as you're heading for the bedroom.
Well, one of the things that I found with couples is one person particularly is very upset with the partner over whatever it is and speaks in a judgmental way, criticizes. So the person shuts down and doesn't want to share. But right. Then they go to work or somewhere else, and there's another person who's not part of their relationship that is listening to them. So maybe talk
right.
about that.
Right, right. So, you know, there again, the more we know ourselves and that whether that person then is going to cheat with that other person or say, let's go out to dinner, the three of us together, and have a conversation, and then say to the husband or wife in the intimate relationship that, in the at-home relationship, I should say, you know, afterward, did you notice how he or she listens to me? You know, did you notice what listening looks like? Some people don't even have a model for that.
Well, what you're saying is not a typical situation. Usually, if somebody is at work or somewhere else having intimate conversations with another person, they are not including their spouse or their
right.
live-at-home partner, and they don't even
right.
tell
and
them
what
about
I'm,
it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. What I'm suggesting is that another way to handle that is, wow, I'm making a friend at work, and I'd really like you to meet that person. You know, rather than sneaking around behind it.
Well, what I would say is that most people that get involved with someone at work don't share it with the partner until somehow the partner finds out. That's the, and
right.
it's also happening with the internet. But
right,
what you're
exactly.
talking about is a partnership where you have some kind of agreement ahead of time to really share about these things. Not to keep
right.
them secret.
Right, in the moment. One of the things we said, Erica, I think we should say to the audience that I'm also involved in polyamory and the concept of open, sustainable, intimate relationships, and the idea that what if you never had to cheat or lie again? You know, that was where we started with that. It doesn't matter whether you're sexual with someone else or not, but what if you never had to cheat or lie in any way to your partner by being open and honest about everything? And that's the way all healthy relationships should start. There again, you're asking for an ingredient about toxicity. Having that simple agreement that I'm going to be open and honest with you, so if I'm finding someone at work I enjoy talking to, I'm going to tell you about it. You know, that's like a baseline for me, that where before people even start, if I'm counseling people who are just looking for a relationship or are dating and having trouble even at that level, that's the first thing is, you know, are you willing to be open and honest? Even when you're dating someone, saying, this is a crucial part of what I need in order to relate to you. So it begins,
and,
you know, begins before the relationship
yes.
begins even, ideally.
And I would say it begins even before you're dating someone, to start doing that all over the place in your life.
Right.
Like
right.
you're in a restaurant
and, again,
and something bothers
right.
you and you speak up
right.
and say
exactly.
the truth.
Exactly. I totally agree. And that, you know, that you're willing to tell the waiter, you know, that this food is not working for me. I'd really like something different, or this is different than I expected, or, you know, whatever. And so, yes, that it's that, again, that knowing yourself, knowing you're willing to say what's working for you and what isn't working for you, to be learning to be able to ask for what you want, to be able to know what you need and ask, you know, like you said, coworkers, your parents, your siblings, whoever, for what you need. What do I need from you? And then maybe they can give it to you and maybe they can't. But that's where friendships and family relationships as well evolve, whether they can, whether the other person can meet your needs. I have five sisters. Well, if my sisters can't meet my needs because they're not as open and honest as I am, then I needed to find other friends who were more open and honest than I am, as I am.
So you have five
intentional
sisters?
Community. That was, I have, yes. And that was a huge part of my going in the intentional community. They still think that was horrible that I did that, you know, that I exposed myself like that at a clothing optional intentional community. You know, and now we're in our 60s and 70s and we can talk about it, but they still disapprove of me. You know, that's just part of how that is. But then I have other friends who do approve of me. And so, you know, my life expands and evolves in that way. Out from my family of origin.
It's really powerful what you're talking about. It's a whole different area. But I want to get back to what happens when you really share openly with your partner what you need and what you want, and when they are not able to provide it, even if they try, because maybe sexual desires outside the marriage. You can't get satisfied by your partner.
Right.
What do you recommend?
And that goes
that?
Back to, you know, when you were saying about toxicity, you know, being in a toxic relationship. I mean, after all, we all know some relationships work and some don't. We wouldn't have the divorce rate that we have if we didn't make mistakes and pick the wrong person. You know, now people, you know, when I was young, we didn't have sex before marriage. So we didn't know what that piece was going to be like until after the wedding night, you know, or to after even a child or two were born, you know, and then all the accentuating circumstances that happen. Now people have more freedom to experiment and try things out before they get into the relationship, but people change over time. And one may over 5 or 10 years become more possessive and the other one may want more freedom. Well, at some point, if we're going in opposite directions and we have to split up, that gets worked out as well, as opposed to, are we willing to find some middle ground where we can both agree on things?
So how do people cultivate and create what they really want in their life, in their relationship and for their whole life?
So my three point takeaway would be: one, know yourself, be transparent with your partner, and get to know your partner on all different levels of what their partner. Again, I'm saying not just at home, not just at home in the bedroom, but all people in your life. Get to know what their hopes and dreams, wants and needs are, and thirdly, be willing to negotiate from there, be able to talk about and decide where can I meet your needs and where can I not meet your needs.
Wow, and I also talk about that in all my courses, that you have to know yourself and know the other person. That's essential,
because Erica, we speak the truth, and truth comes from many places. In this Human Awareness Institute that I mentioned, you know, that was one of their like keynotes was. And this is the way they would say it. Be willing to ask for 100% of what you want. Second, be willing to hear no for an answer. And third, negotiate from there. And when a relationship is set up like that, that I'm gonna tell you what my needs are, I'm willing to hear that you don't need that or you don't want that. But then if we don't negotiate from there, there's no point in continuing the conversation. If you're willing to negotiate, then we have a lifetime of talking about what we can meet and what we can't.
And I always dislike the word compromise, because somebody told me a long time ago, you have to compromise in a relationship. And just doesn't feel good. Both people giving up what they really want, you know, to please someone. But
and
negotiating is different.
It is different, and I have a whole page of that on my website because those words are very important to know the difference between that.
Well, so this is wonderful. We could talk for a long time. It's such an important topic because so many people are struggling And some of them end a relationship where they really could have worked it out.
Right, exactly, so, exactly.
So how can people get your book and how can they contact you?
So my website is SuzanneRobbins.com, which, and my name is spelled SuzanneRobbins. And if you Google that, I'm the only one with that unique spelling. And so all my different social media stuff comes up. And the book is available on Nook and Kindle and Amazon and everything else. And it will be coming out in paperback this week on the 22nd, 1 week from today. So right now there's still a hardcover available, but now there will be a paperback as well. And so that's the best way to contact me through the website.
And I want to congratulate you that they've continued and that it's coming out in paperback. You've done a good job and it's so important.
It is important. And, you know, it's not a light read. There's work to do when you're building and cultivating healthy relationships.
And I think that's an important, I don't even want to call it work, but it takes time and effort. It
right.
doesn't just happen.
There's play to do.
It's not all.
Right. Let's say, right, that there's play to do. You know, instead of saying there's work to do, there's play to do. When you're playing with each other and getting to know each other, that's why the newness of relationship is so exciting, because you're in a more playful situation. Once 5 or 10 years go by, then it feels like work. But people change over time, and we have to keep playing with each other. We have to keep finding that point of what was fun in the beginning.
Absolutely. That's a beautiful key to end with. So, Suzanne, please just tell us again how people can get to your website.
Okay. It's SuzanneRobbins.com, SuzanneRobbins.com.
Well, Suzanne, thank you so much for sharing your insights with me today and for our
wonderful
listeners.
Erica. All right. Thank you very much for having me on.
Yes. And to those of you listening, I'm your host, Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. Please visit my website, drericagoodstone.com. Get one of my special reports so that you can be on my mailing list and be the first to hear when my Secret to Healing Through Love webinar goes live.
Thank you.